Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Monday, December 8th, 2014, episode 10.32, the Week 14 Recap Show. Wherever you are right now listening to this show, and however you are listening, whether streaming or downloading the podcast, I appreciate you joining in again. Just three games left in the NFL. Oh, wow, people. I mean, it is coming down to the nitty-gritty. The Saints get blown out at home by the Panthers, while the Steelers rob the Bengals. Didn't New Orleans just beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh last week? How'd that happen? The Rams shout out the Redskins while Jeff Fisher trolls Washington during the coin toss. I'll tell you how he did that. And the Raiders got their second win of the season by beating the 49ers?
What?
That's right. Plus, Peter Kinberg finally gives the fans a challenge game win. Much needed and much deserved. And what did Coach Marvin Lewis call Johnny Football? Did he really say that? Lots to talk about. Let's chomp it in!
Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves.
Oh, welcome back, people. 14 weeks in the books, 3 weeks left, three games to go, 13 games played by all teams in the NFL, no more byes, playoffs heating up, and big, big games coming on week 15. I know some users don't think that there's big games. Greg, calling my buddy Greg Campbell, the Buffalo Bills fan, I said there's a lot of big games coming up in Week 15. The NFL playoff picture is going to become much clearer. Huge divisional games, Arizona versus St. Louis, Miami at New England, Cincinnati at Cleveland, Denver at San Diego, San Francisco at Seattle, and Sunday Night Football, big divisional rivals, Dallas at Philadelphia. I can't wait for next week. I'm going to watch every single game. I'm setting up Steven's Bar and Grill again. Going to have five TVs going, five games at once, all the action, Red Zone channel on the laptop. It's going to be fantastic. And if we can swing it, we'll be playing a little bit of poker with my nephew, Jordan, who should be returning home from overseas. Boy, if you're listening, I hope you come home safely. Looking forward to seeing you and watching some Dallas Cowboy football with you on Sunday Night Football. Now, folks, before I get to the 16 games and give props to the fans who thrashed me this week, it was a bad week of picks for me. Peter Kinberg, I'd like to congratulate you, my friend. You are...
I am the smartest man alive!
Not only did you get the challenge game, you got the second game that we differed on. We only differed on two games. And I guess, you know, Richard Graves, I will have to give you some props, sir. You certainly picked games different than myself as well, and you got most of those right. It's about time. You still have a lot of games to go. I still think you're 9 or 10 games off the pace, buddy. But it was just a bad week. I think I only got 9 or 10 right this week. So not a great week in the prognostication department. But it happens. I can't win every single game. I think, you know, we've learned a long time ago that it's very difficult to go 16-0 for a week. And I've had some very impressive weeks. I think I've had back-to-back weeks where I've only missed 2 or 3 games. So it was due. I was due for a bad one. And what can I say? There are just some teams out there this week that I have no idea how they won. And I have no idea how the results happened. I'll talk about all of those. But first, I'll talk about head coach Marvin Lewis of the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, Lewis was being interviewed by Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal, and he asked him if you know, not knowing which quarterback was going to go for the Cleveland Browns, if that was going to affect how the Cincinnati Bengals would prepare for the game. Now, Lewis pretty much said, no, it doesn't. And he goes on to say, you'll get a little bit more movement if Manziel's the quarterback, you know, the way they did that thing against Buffalo. But on the other hand, no, other than that, no, that doesn't impact you at all. You got to go defend the offense. You don't defend the player. And then he paused and then said, particularly a midget.
What?
That's right. I don't know where it came from. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't really prompted. There really wasn't a question asked about Manziel, but that's what Marvin Lewis said. I actually obtained the audio that Nate Ulrich recorded, and he does, in fact, have Marvin Lewis on that audio saying that just that. He says, particularly a midget, when talking about Johnny Manziel. Look, I don't know whether to laugh or cry or why Marvin Lewis thought he had to say that. I know that Johnny Manziel is a little short, but he's certainly not that short. And, you know, I know that there's some folks that would find that word particularly offensive. It's probably not a word that some of those people would like to be called. I don't know what Marvin Lewis was thinking here. Now, I'm pretty sure he said it in jest. I think he was trying to be funny. I'm not going to play the audio, but trust me, I do have it. He does say it. And I just, you know, Marvin Lewis should know better than to say things like that. I don't know why he went on record, you know, especially being recording. You know, he knew that he was being recorded. I don't know why he would go and say that. There you go. Marvin Lewis and his thoughts on Johnny Manziel. The fact that the Cleveland Browns and head coach Mike Pettine still do not know who their quarterback is going to be this Sunday is ridiculous. Dude, you should be starting Johnny Manziel. That is it. That is the only person that should be starting quarterback for you. I have no idea why the Cleveland Browns and Mike Pettine are so reluctant to start Johnny Football. Look, bottom line is the Cleveland Browns lost this week a horrific game to the Indianapolis Colts. It was a game in which the Browns pretty much took control of the entire game up until the very end. Once again, you have Brian Hoyer, though, who had a horrible game. He was 14 of 31 for 140 yards, no touchdown passes, and two INTs. He's certainly not playing like he wants to keep his job. The fact that you are 7-6, okay? And as far as the playoff picture is concerned, the Cleveland Browns have a whole mess of teams above them and also at 7-6. Those would be the 8-5 Pittsburgh Steelers, San Diego Chargers, and Baltimore Ravens. Not to mention the Texans, Dolphins, Chiefs, and Bills are also all 7-6. They all have better conference records than the Cleveland Browns. The likelihood of Cleveland getting into the playoffs is minuscule. It's tiny. I would say there's like a 3% chance that the Browns get into the playoffs. So why not take this time to bring in Johnny Manziel for these final three games, see if he sparks your team, and if possibly he sparks your team, maybe, just maybe, you get into the playoffs. Look, they have the Cincinnati Bengals. They're at Carolina playing the Panthers, and they're all at Baltimore playing the Ravens. Yes, two of those are pretty tough. Carolina, I don't know. Like I said, they beat down New Orleans in New Orleans this week, so we don't ever know what we're going to get from the Carolina Panthers. But I think Johnny Manziel is an unknown. These three teams know nothing about him, wouldn't know how to get ready for him, and just possibly he could go in there and spark an offense that has been anemic. Oh, I don't know what the Cleveland Browns are doing. I would say start the guy, start Manziel, and coach Marvin Lewis. Yeah, probably best if you save your jokes for your buddies and not get recorded while you're saying things like that. That's all I've got to say about that. That wasn't very good. Anyways, as far as the playoff picture is concerned, not a lot to be determined this week, week 15. There are a lot of games, and a lot of those games that I talked about earlier will kind of make things a little bit clearer, but not as far as a lot of clinching scenarios. However, a little bit later on the show, I will be bringing Professor Playoffs in to answer some questions, because I've gotten some emails and some tweets and a couple texts as to, hell, yo, where's Professor Playoffs? I think it's time for him to make an appearance. And I spoke with him today, and he said that, yes, he is relieved that he doesn't have to deal with Jeff's hostility. You know, Jeff actually shot him 1 year. We're gonna put all that behind us, and Professor Playoffs will be more than happy to come in. Also, there's some questions that a few of you have tweeted and posted on Facebook. I will get to those regarding the playoffs as well. No. Right now, it's time to honor the fans as they finally get a win after 3 wins in a row by myself. The fans get on the board and have now narrowed the gap in the challenge game. It's gotten a little bit closer. I still have a 2-game lead. That's very nice. But the fans do get on the board again, and it is now 8-6. Week 14 goes to the fans. 8-6. I have 8 wins. The fans have 6. 2 games back, and you all need to thank Peter for getting you on the board. But that means next week the pick goes back to me. I'll make sure that I don't make any silly decisions like taking the Tennessee Titans over the New York Giants. What was I thinking? All right, let's get to some games. We'll start out Thursday Night Football, where the Dallas Cowboys traveled to Chicago to face the Bears. The Cowboys were coming off a beatdown where they lost on Thanksgiving against the Philadelphia Eagles. Lo and behold, this was a whole different football team. DeMarco Murray breaks out, rushes for 179 yards, adds another 49 yards on 9 receptions, has a touchdown. Tony Romo throws for 205 yards, no turnovers, 3 touchdown tosses, and they beat up the Bears 41-28. On a night that was pretty cold in Chicago, the Bears took care of business. They remain the lone team in the National Football League to remain perfect on the road. They improved to a perfect 6-0 on the road. They got 2 more road games. So they're 6-0 on the road. They were 5-0 before that. And the Chicago Bears are done. Stick a fork in them. Brandon Marshall took a shot to the back, messed up his ribs on a play. He had a phenomenal one-handed bobble kind of catch earlier in the game, but he had to be taken to the hospital. I believe the Chicago Bears have now placed him on IR, and he is done for the year. The Cowboys are night and day. That game against Philadelphia on Thanksgiving, not making any excuses for them, but you got to remember they did play Sunday night football against the New York Giants, didn't get home. They got on a flight after that game, got home at like 6 o'clock Monday morning, and then they had to turn around and play the Eagles on Thursday for Thanksgiving. Now they have 10 days rest. They go to Philly, where, like I said, they've been perfect on the road. I guess they focus a little bit better. There's not as many distractions as there is at home. And they get a chance at Philly again. And with the Philadelphia Eagles losing to Seattle, we'll get to that game in a minute, the Cowboys control destiny and destiny is in their own hands. They'll have a shot to win the division. All right, we'll move on to Sunday, where the Pittsburgh Steelers travel to Cincinnati to face the Cincinnati Bengals. And I don't understand it. I was tweeting during this game. I am not sure what in the world is going on in the National Football League, but how in the world can one week the Pittsburgh Steelers play a home game, host the New Orleans Saints, and get beat 35-32, allow Drew Brees to sling it around and just be marvelous on their own home field, and lose, even though Ben Roethlisberger throws for 435 yards. They still lose. Many of those yards were in garbage time when the Saints had a big lead. But still, they allowed Mark Ingram to rush for 122 yards. This week, they go on the road, go to Cincinnati, division leader, and spank them 42-21. Meanwhile, those Saints, those very same Saints that went on the road and won in Pittsburgh, hosted the Carolina Panthers, a team that had only won three games. Okay? The Carolina Panthers were 3-8-1. Yet they thrashed the Saints 41-10. Cam Newton was amazing. He rushed for a touchdown. He threw three touchdown passes. Jonathan Stewart rushed for 155 yards on the Saints. All the Saints could do was they got into a little fight against Carolina because they didn't like Cam Newton doing the Superman gesture. There was some fisticuffs during the game as one of the Saints players took offense at Cam Newton during a Superman pose after rushing for that touchdown win. And the Saints were just they were outplayed, they were out hustled, they were out coached, they were out everything, and they got beat down 41-10 one week after going into Pittsburgh and beating the Steelers. I missed both of these games obviously because I picked the Saints thinking, okay, they finally got off the schneid, they're going back home, they'll finally win at home. There's no way they're gonna lose four straight games at home. And I missed the Cincinnati Bengals because the Cincinnati Bengals were at home. They needed the win to stay on top of in their division. Pittsburgh just looked horrible the week before, and they rolled Cincinnati. Those two of my losses right there. Now, fortunately for me, there were also Peter's losses because he had the same picks. Except in the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game. That was one of the games we differed on. He had the Steelers while I had Cincinnati, and Cincinnati just they looked awful. Even though A.J. Green, mind you, went off. A.J. Green had a huge game in that one. He finished, if I'm looking at the stats correctly, he finished that game with 224 yards receiving. Posted a touchdown. 224 yards on 11 catches. If I told you A.J. Green's going to have 224 yards on 11 receptions and a touchdown, Andy Dalton's going to throw for 302 yards, you would have told me the Cincinnati Bengals are going to kill Pittsburgh. Yet it was Roethlisberger throwing for 350 yards again, three TDs. Le'Veon Bell was amazing on the ground, 185 yards rushing, two touchdowns there. It was unbelievable. Incredible. And I'm sick and tired of this Pittsburgh Steelers football team. I really don't know who they are. Seriously, I'm having just issues with the Pittsburgh Steelers. One week, this is a team that loses to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Do you remember that? Just a few weeks ago, in week four, they played Tampa Bay in Pittsburgh and lost. They struggled against Jacksonville. They lose to the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland. Then they beat Houston. They rolled Indianapolis, beat them 51-34. Killed Baltimore 43-23. Then they lose to the Jets. Sneak out a 3-point win over Tennessee. lose at home to the Saints, and now put up 42 and roll Cincinnati. I don't know what to make of that team. They are my definitive this year's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. 1 week you get a good team, the next they're awful. That's what the Pittsburgh Steelers are. You don't know what you're going to get. How can you trust them? How can anybody trust the Pittsburgh Steelers right now? They're 8-5, but who knows? Next week they got Atlanta. In Atlanta, they're going to lose this game, and Atlanta got rolled by Green Bay. They got rolled. Yet the Pittsburgh Steelers are probably going to go into the Georgia Dome and lose. Then they host Kansas City and Cincinnati to finish the season. I'm going to go on record right now, because of their inconsistent play and because, as Forrest Gump would say, the Pittsburgh Steelers are like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. You don't. And that's why I'm going to go on record right now and say the Pittsburgh Steelers will not make the playoffs. Because as you'll hear from Professor Playoffs right now, that the Pittsburgh Steelers do have the tie-break edge over the Baltimore Ravens right now. So they would be in the playoffs. However, with a loss or two down the stretch, that would simply just take them out. And I'm going to be on record saying that they're going to lose one or two of those games, and get kicked out of the playoffs. That's what Pittsburgh are. They're a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. 1 week they're caramel in the middle and they're juicy and they're delicious. And then the next week there's coconut Pringles pralines. And you're like, what was that I just bit into? Blah, spit it out. That's what Pittsburgh is. And I'm tired of them. I'm sick and tired of them. I don't want to watch them anymore. They're done. They're done for me. But on the other hand, so are the Cincinnati Bengals, because they're doing the exact same thing. 1 week, they look fantastic. The next week, they're just awful. It's hard. It's hard because you look at that whole division right there in the AFC North, and every single team has 7 or more wins. You have 8-4-1 Cincinnati, who have a half-game lead on the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens, who are 8-5. You have Cleveland at 7-6. And I really, the Baltimore Ravens, it's crazy, because Baltimore is, they have net points of 101. So they are killing teams, but they've lost, you know, they've lost some close ones. So for them to be 8-5 and have 101 net points, but be in third place in their division, just tells you how tough it is right now in the AFC North. But the Cincinnati Bengals, they got to keep winning. They can't be messing around anymore, because that's what they're doing right now. They're messing around. They sneaked a 1-point win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last week, and this week they got rolled by Pittsburgh. They can't be doing that. They still have to go and play at Cleveland. Then they host the Denver Broncos. I'm just going to tell you, that's a loss right now. There's no way they're beating Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos, especially if Denver's still going to hold on hope and try and get that number one seed. And then they finish the season at Pittsburgh again, the team they just lost to at home. So that's where Cincinnati's at. They have a half-game lead, and I'm not sure they'll be able to hold it. All right, enough about those games. We'll move on. The Indianapolis Colts traveled to Cleveland to face the Browns, and it took every last second of that football game for the Indianapolis Colts to come back and get a 25-24 victory. This was a game, a classic example of why you need someone other than Brian Hoyer at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. A game where he did nothing for you offensively. You know, the defense kept you in games. Andrew Luck threw a couple ill-advised passes. He had 2 interceptions. The only problem between Andrew Luck's 2 interceptions and Brian Hoyer's 2 interceptions is that Brian Hoyer didn't give you any other offense. He had no touchdown passes. Luck threw 2 touchdown passes, and he ran one in. The Cleveland Browns got a fumble recovery in the end zone for a touchdown. They had an interception return for a touchdown. So right there, you know that 14 of their 24 points came at the hands of the defense. That was not Brian Hoyer and the offense putting those points up. So, you know, the Browns need something offensively. I don't want to say that they're inept, because sometimes they do look like they could move, but they're just not consistent. And they're not consistent because the quarterback is erratic at times. Every once in a while, he'll make a brilliant pass, and then he'll be like, he'll miss three in a row. It's like, seriously? You missed that one? So that's where the Cleveland Browns are. Like I said, 24 points where they were leading the game, and at the end, I was watching, and I'm sitting there watching, and I just knew that Indianapolis was going to win that football game. There was never a doubt in my mind that Indy would come back and score enough points to win that football game. And they did, 25-24. They improved to 9-4. They're still holding out for probably a little too late for the number one seed, but they might have enough wins to get that number two seed, especially if Denver or the Patriots falter. The Cleveland Browns at 7-6, I'm just not sure they're going to have enough, and I think they need to make a move. Last week, I was calling for Johnny Manziel. I thought it was time, and I certainly believe it's time now. Once again, here's the stat line. That's all you need to see. 14 of 31, 140 yards, no touchdowns, two picks, and just awful, awful throws. That's what you got from Brian Hoyer. If Pettine comes out tomorrow and says that he's sticking with Hoyer, then he is as stubborn as I am. I guess maybe if you ask Trisha, she'll tell you that sometimes I can be stubborn. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I can be. But, you know, usually it's because I'm right. Sometimes I'm wrong. She's like shaking her head. I can be stubborn sometimes, but this is something that I would give in on. I would certainly cave and be like, all right, you know what? Maybe they're right. Maybe it's time for me to put in Manziel. And you know what, Cleveland? It's time. Now, in one of the games that I really did not watch this weekend, trust me, I wanted to watch every game. I just didn't have the time, couldn't find the time, doing a lot of work prepping for the holidays, folks. I didn't watch much of the Detroit Lion-Tampa Bay game where the Lions beat Tampa Bay 34-17. But can you blame me? Tampa Bay has not shown much all year. They do have a couple victories, but those coming at the hands of the Washington Redskins and the Pittsburgh Steelers, the team I said earlier that was just Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. And Tampa Bay has just not really excited me ever since I saw them in London. I know there was a few years ago, but there is a reason they are 2-11. And the Detroit Lions, you know, they're in the thick of things. They're in the playoff picture right now at 9-4. They would be projected as the sixth seed in the playoffs. They got some work, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Detroit Lions finish the season, because their final three games are all against the division opponents. They've got the Minnesota Vikings next. Then they travel to Chicago to play the Bears, and they finish the season at Green Bay against the Packers. And that is going to be a very, very big game in that division. All right, I will continue to move on. Next up, the Baltimore Ravens travel to Miami to face the Miami Dolphins. And here's where all the Patriots fans came at me. And even Richard Graves. Richard Graves came at me as well. Come on, Gravesy. You know, I thought that the Miami Dolphins, look, the Miami Dolphins had this game, right? They started up. They took a 10-0 lead. And then it's like they fell asleep. That's what happened. They fell asleep. They took a 10-7 lead in the halftime. And I was still feeling pretty good about that. But they did not come out in the second half at all. And the Baltimore Ravens made them pay. Now, Baltimore did get one of those questionable calls. Was it a fumble? Was it an incomplete pass? Was his hand going forward? I think that was a fumble myself, but they said it was an incomplete pass. One play later, the Baltimore Ravens go in and score a touchdown. That kind of switched momentum and turned it over in Baltimore's favor. But the final score, 28-13. Here's what I'm going to say about the Miami Dolphins and what a part of their problem is. As much as I've liked them, I think they've got a really good football team. I think defensively they really get after the quarterback and they do some good things. But on the offensive side of the ball, at some point, Philbin and the Miami Dolphins coaching staff is going to have to unleash Ryan Tannehill. At some point, you're going to have to trust Tannehill to throw the ball down the field. I don't think the guy throws a ball further than 15 yards ever. Ever. And if you're a defense and you're looking at the Miami Dolphins and they're coming at you and you're in the secondary, why would you be afraid? Who would you be afraid of? Tannehill and Mike Wallace have never been on the same page. They don't look at all like they're on the same page. They don't look like they want to be on the same page. And Tannehill doesn't look like he wants to throw the football further than 15 yards ever. And I wish I had a researcher who could tell me exactly how many times the ball has traveled more than 15 yards after it's left Ryan Tannehill's hands. I have to say this entire season, maybe 3, 4, 5. I'll go under 5. Under 5. That's how many times Tannehill. If you don't have a deep threat and Tannehill, you're not going to trust him to throw the ball down the field, you're not going to win a lot of football games because defenses are just going to stack the box. That's what happened. Lamar Miller was running the ball great in the first half. He looked pretty sharp. He looked like, you know, he was doing pretty good. Baltimore changed. They're like, fine, you're going to run it on us. We're going to move. We're going to put it in the box. We're going to force you to throw. And Tannehill was just never accurate and never threw the ball down the field. I just saw Aaron Rodgers today throw some passes that traveled 30, 40 yards in the air before they were caught by Jordy Nelson. I mean, you got to throw the ball down the field. You got to be aggressive. Otherwise, no one is going to fear you. That's where the Miami Dolphins are. And maybe I should have jumped off their bandwagon weeks ago. I just don't learn. I don't learn. Well, I do learn eventually. I just don't learn soon enough. Anyways, that's enough there. The Baltimore Ravens are still in the playoff hunt. Miami at 7-6. Yeah, they're still in it. But they have to win out, which means that, you know, by winning out, if they can win out, right, if the Miami Dolphins were able to win out, that means they would have to win this week coming up at New England against the Patriots. And then they have the Vikings and the Jets. Winnable games, right? They can handle Minnesota, and they can handle the Jets. Trust me, they can handle those two games. The big game for Miami is can they go into New England and do what they did against Tom Brady the first week of the season. They already have a win against New England. They go in there, they win that football game, they can win the Vikings game and the Jets game and finish at 10-6, and maybe, just maybe, that's enough to sneak them in there. Let's see what happens. But probably for most intent and purposes, stick a fork in the Dolphins, not literally because that would hurt, and I kind of like Dolphins. But, yeah, they're pretty much it's going to be done. No, Richard, I know what you're saying right now. I'm not conceding to you just yet. Let's see these last 3 weeks and see how they play out. That's an inside thing between Richard Graves and myself, folks. All right, moving right along. The New York Jets travel to Minnesota to face the Vikings. This game goes to overtime. Geno Smith, I just, you know what? I don't know. I feel bad for the New York Jets. Seriously, I'm watching a little bit of this game. The game starts, right? I mean, literally the game just starts. And within seconds of the game starting, literally, I am not kidding you, 6 seconds into the game, first play by the New York Jets, Geno Smith throws a pass that's intercepted and returned 27 yards for a touchdown. Throws a pick six to start the game. That's how it started for the New York Jets. At that point, I'm like, just end the season already. call the league tomorrow and say, you know what, we are 2-11. We're not very good. We're just embarrassing ourselves. We'll take losses for the next three games. We forfeit the next three games. We're done. We'll finish the season 2-14, and that's the way it's going to be. We're just not going to show up because we're embarrassing ourselves right now. That's 6 seconds into the football game. 6 seconds in. You throw a pick six, and that's how you have to start. I mean, it's just not good. Just not good at all. Then somehow you manage to come back, tie the football game, force overtime, and in overtime, two plays into overtime, you give up an 87-yard touchdown pass to Jairus Wright. He just goes down the sideline, wins the game. 30-24 was the final. It's just, you know, yeah. I have friends that are Jets fans, and they're hurting. They're hurting. I'm hurting for them. It's just really bad. Bad there for the New York Jets. Rex Ryan, unfortunately, I believe that, you know, his ship has come. It's time. I think the Ryan boys, Rex as the head coach, Rob as the defensive coordinator in New Orleans, they're out of work next year. I seriously do believe they're out of job. And Rex Ryan will finally possibly maybe become a news broadcaster or get into broadcasting, become a sports analyst and talk about football. I'm sure someone will pay him to do that, but I'm not sure that he will be coaching very much after this season. The Carolina Panthers and New Orleans Saints, I pretty much talked about this, 41-10 beatdown. The Saints, they're pathetic at home. Lose four straight games at home, and they weren't even competitive. That's the problem. I think that's the problem that I'm having with the New Orleans Saints is at home, they haven't been competitive. 41-10 beatdown at an opponent who had won three games all year, not looked good at all. You know, surprisingly enough, the Carolina Panthers are still in the division hunt. They're 4-8-1. 4-8-1. The Atlanta Falcons are 5-8. The New Orleans Saints are 5-8. And just a half game back at 4-8-1 are the Carolina Panthers. Oh, the South is just bad, people. It is just bad. Not good at all. The New York Giants and Tennessee Titans, here comes the challenge game. And for Peter, I'll give it to him one more time.
I am the smartest man alive.
I don't know what I was thinking. You know what I was thinking with the Giants? I was like, you know what? They had this big lead against Jacksonville. We know the Jags aren't that good of a football team. And they're not going to win. They're going to go on the road. They don't care about playing football. It's just bad in Tennessee. They look awful. Menberger got hurt, and once he got hurt and got out of the game, offensively they didn't look very good. They didn't do much well. And the New York Giants finally got back in the win column. You know, it'd been a while from them to win a game. And I got to give it to Peter and to Rich Graves. They said, look, this game's going to be all about Odell Beckham Jr. He had 11 catches for 130 yards and a touchdown, and they got the win, giving the New York Giants the win and the fans the challenge game win. So congratulations to you guys. You guys are back on the board. It's 8-6, getting there close to the end. The New York Giants, they improve, if you can say they improved, to 4-9, while Tennessee dropped to 2-11. The St. Louis Rams do something that hasn't been done since the Dallas Cowboys did, and that's shutting out opponents in back-to-back weeks. 24-0 beatdown of the Washington Redskins. That is what the St. Louis Rams were able to do, something that no team has done in quite some time. And, you know, at the same time that as they're beating up the Washington Redskins, Jeff Fisher did a little something to kind of make fun, if you will, take a little jab at the Washington Redskins during the opening coin toss ceremony. Jeff Fisher, and a lot of people are saying that he was trolling the Redskins. I don't think he was doing that. I think he sent a message, but I don't think he was necessarily trolling the Washington Redskins. But Fisher sent Janoris Jenkins, Michael Brockers, Zach Stacy, Stedman Bailin, Greg Robinson, and Alec Ogletree. Those six guys were the captains, if you will, for the game against the Washington Redskins. As they walked out to flip the coin toss, it was noticeable that all six of those players were acquired as a result of the trade with the Washington Redskins, in which Washington then picked Robert Griffin III back in 2012. Quite interesting that a head coach would do that. It's pretty cool, actually. You know, hey, here are the six guys that we have on our team, thanks to you. And they're going to go flip the coin. Pretty weird. Yeah, he was making a statement. I'm not sure why he was making the statement, though. I mean, Jeff Fisher, all I have to tell him, or all I would like to remind Jeff Fisher, is you're 6-7. You're at the bottom of your division. And, yeah, mathematically you're still alive for the playoffs, but you're not making it. So, sure, you can make fun of the 3-10 Washington Redskins. And you know what? It's me, so make fun of the Washington Redskins all you want. You're still 6-7 at the end of the day. It's not something to write home to mom about. So I decided to start this podcast a little early. I started it at halftime of Monday Night Football. There's still 6 minutes, 15 seconds left in the game. And this game has become a 10-point game. It's 40-30. Atlanta will not go away. They're trying to make it close. So I'll keep my eyes on that as I continue to talk about the rest of the games. The Kansas City Chiefs go out to Arizona to face the Arizona Cardinals and fall 17-14. Now, Richard Graves originally had Arizona. He texted me early on Saturday, says, you know what, I've changed my mind. I'm taking Kansas City. Arizona has far too many injuries. They're not going to win the game. I just didn't think Arizona was looking good, but somehow they managed to keep Kansas City in check, held them to 14 points. They scored a touchdown late, passed by Drew Stanton, scores a touchdown to make it 17-14, and that was your final. I'm not sure what to make of the Kansas City Chiefs. Once again, another team that, you know, 1 week comes out and balls out hard, and then this week fails to match their season average. Had they scored their average points of 23 points, they win this football game, and they just couldn't do that. Got to hand it to Arizona, though. A lot of people, including myself, had said they're folding, their season's coming down, they're probably not even going to make the playoffs anymore, but here they are still winning football games. And, you know, it's not like the Arizona Cardinals are done by any stretch of the imagination. They do have a tough schedule. They're finishing with all three divisional games on the road at St. Louis. And we know the Rams have been playing good football right now. They have held their last two opponents scoreless. Then they play Seattle at home. Seahawks already beat them once. They're playing good football right now. They took out the Philadelphia Eagles this week. Seahawks going to be a tough out. And then the final game at San Francisco against the 49ers. It would be possible that the 49ers will be playing for their playoff lives, and that's going to be a tough game. If you look at the schedule on paper, yeah, the Arizona Cardinals can win a couple of those games. But at the flip side of that, the way these games are going right now, the Arizona Cardinals could lose all three of them. They could lose at St. Louis, to Seattle, and at San Francisco. and finish the season at 10-6 and be on the outside looking in. That's what Arizona has to consider right now. This was a big win against the Kansas City Chiefs. They really needed it because it kind of opens things up a little bit for them. Had they lost, it certainly would have become a very slippery slope and been very dangerous for them. So the 17-14 victory is big, but they still have a lot of work to do. The Denver Broncos host the Buffalo Bills. They cruise to a 24-3 lead, and then they kind of just, you know, Peyton Manning was, it was weird. They decided we're going to be a run team today, and they didn't gain that much on the ground. If you look at the numbers, they only rushed for about, although they did have 10 rushing first downs, they only rushed for 133 total yards. But C.J. Anderson did have 3 touchdowns on the ground. Peyton Manning didn't throw any touchdowns. He did throw 2 picks, but it was enough. They held on after taking the 24-3 lead. The Buffalo Bills scored 14 points there in the fourth quarter to make it close, 24-17. But at the end, a loss is a loss. And the Denver Broncos, a W is a W. They'll take that win. Denver improves to 10-3. Meanwhile, Buffalo falls to 7-6. Their playoff hopes dwindling away game by game. Once again, Buffalo is one of those teams that needs a lot of help if they're to get into the playoffs. They, as I said, are 7-6. They don't have a very good division or conference record. In the division, they're 3-2. In the conference, they're 4-6. So that puts them down near the bottom of those 7-6 teams. They have the Packers still. I'm sorry, they're not beating Green Bay. Much to the chagrin of my friend Greg, who is probably yelling at the iPod right now, they're not beating the Packers. I'm sorry. Then they go to Oakland and play the Raiders. You know, the Raiders will probably be done by then. Then they host, or actually they don't host, they go to New England to play the Patriots. So I'm gonna officially, I know I'm going to get a long email from Greg. I could just feel it right now if I say this, but I'm going to do it. I am sticking a fork in the Bills. They just got 2 really tough games there. I don't see how they go and win all 3 games, and that's what it's going to take. Just not sure how they're going to do it with Green Bay and New England on the schedule. Enough there for the Bills. And the Denver Broncos, you know, they are sitting pretty. They're looking at the number 2 seed right now. They've got their eyes on the first seed. Obviously, they will take that if they win out and the Patriots drop a game. And that's what it's going to take. We'll have a question a little later on from fans about who can go and win in Foxborough. And it's going to be tough. I'll tell you that much. It's going to be tough. The Broncos have the Chargers, Bengals, and Raiders on their schedule, all winnable games. I think that they will most likely wind up at 13-3, and we'll see if maybe the Patriots have a game left on their schedule that they might possibly drop. Finally, the Seattle Seahawks and Philadelphia Eagles. Seattle goes into Philly, and Eagles fans were really upset with me saying that I wasn't giving the Eagles a chance, that I was just mad because of what they had done to the Cowboys the week before. And I just think the Seattle defense is not the Seattle defense from 5 weeks ago. This defense has stepped it up a notch. I think the Eagles were averaging something like 453 offensive yards per game, and this they got held to under 100 in the first half. And I think they only had like 180 total. So I don't think that I was being that mean or that negative. I just, you know, think that the Seattle Seahawks defense has turned a notch. And they look pretty good. So 24-14 was the final there. And I don't think Seattle offensively had their best game. Big game coming up. I mean, there's no other way to say it. No other way to slice it. Dallas at Philly. Both teams sitting at 9-4. The winner takes a one-game lead in the division with two to go. So it's big. It's huge. It's huge. The Eagles have the easier road because after Dallas, they have the Redskins and the Giants on their schedule, two division foes who they've already taken care of, and they're not playing their best football. The Dallas Cowboys have a little harder row. After this game, they have to go play the Indianapolis Colts, and then they finish the season with the Washington Redskins at Washington. So Dallas certainly needs to win out, and they need to win this game. As a matter of fact, I'll go on record and say if the Dallas Cowboys do not beat the Philadelphia Eagles this week in Philly, they will not be making the playoffs, even if they win out and finish at 11-5. Now, the final game, New England at San Diego, 23-14 was your final. I knew, look, the score, yeah, they won by 9 points. It was a lot closer than that. And San Diego, really, for the most part, just offensively, you know, they tried to do some things early on. They took a 14-3 lead, but then they allowed 20 unanswered points. And you just cannot do that in this league, especially not to good teams like the New England Patriots. They never got back in a groove offensively. Phillip Rivers killed me. Trust me, in fantasy football, I had him everywhere. Killed me this week. So it was not pretty. And, folks, the Atlanta Falcons are not going quietly into the night. 3 minutes left. The Packers added a field goal to make it 43-30. But the Falcons are marching right down the field. They're back at the Green Bay 20-yard line with 3.5 minutes left in the game. Matt Ryan, there's a stoppage of clock. The Packers just took a timeout. So 3 minutes and 3:35 left in the game, and it's a 13-point game with the Falcons already at the 20-yard line. They score here. Onside kick, maybe. They still have all three timeouts, so they don't even have to onside kick. They can kick it away and try and play some defense. Game's not over. I said that Atlanta got blown out, but they're not going quietly into the night. Oh, man. That's what I'm telling you about this league right now, people. It's crazy. It's crazy. You never know what's going to happen. 1 week, a team looks like they are the best team in the world. Look at them. They could kill everybody. And then the following week, you're like, I just got some regular old crackers. That's what it is right now. That's why I love football. I think that's why you all listen and you know how passionate I am about football, because that's how you are too. You know, 1 week, it's great. My team is fantastic. And then the next week, I just got some regular old crackers. That's what it is. It's beautiful. And if you don't know where that's from, you're probably too young. And I won't tell you where it's from. Anyways, the final game, I skipped Philadelphia. How did I skip Oakland at San Francisco? I don't know why I skipped it. But anyways, Oakland at San Francisco at Oakland, 24-13, Raiders beating the 49ers. The 49ers are in disarray. Once again, we start hearing the Harbaugh's out. Harbaugh's going to go coach Michigan. He wants to coach Michigan. No, and now we hear he's going to be the Oakland Raiders coach. Davis has come over and said, hey, you know you want to come coach for us because you could take our dysfunction and make it functional. So there you go. Harbaugh's going, apparently next year, not going to be with the San Francisco 49ers. It could be either at the college ranks in Michigan, could be across the bay in Oakland. We don't know where he's going to be. I tell you what, if he's not with the 49ers, it's a crazy, crazy road in the NFL for head coaches. I just don't get it. Anyways, that's about all the time we've got. I'm going to answer a couple questions. We'll take Oswaldo's first. He simply asks, will the Chargers make the playoffs? Let me see. The San Diego Superchargers got the Broncos this week, at San Francisco against the 49ers, and at Kansas City in the final week. Ooh, they're 8-5. They could possibly be 10-6. I'm not sure. I've said all along that in the AFC, I don't think 10-6 gets you into the dance. I don't think they've got what it takes to beat Denver this week. And I don't think, you know, I think they can beat the 49ers and the Chiefs. I just don't think they've got enough. And it's going to take, they're going to win, need to win all three games to get in. So I'm going to say no. There will be no San Diego Chargers in the playoffs. Let's look to Facebook. That was a Twitter from a Twitter question. Let's look to Facebook. Ian asked, who looks capable of winning at Lambeau and Foxborough? In the NFC, I would say right now, the way the Seattle Seahawks defense is playing, they could probably stifle Aaron Rodgers and go into Lambeau and win. In the AFC, I still like Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. I know they didn't look good the last time they played New England, but I would take my chances with Manning and the Broncos. So that's what I see there if, in fact, Green Bay gets the number one seed and New England gets the number one seed in the AFC. Derek asks, out of the teams in wild card or in the hunt for wild card, do you think can make a run at the Super Bowl? One NFC and one AFC team. Looking at the wild card picture right now in the NFC, it would be the Detroit Lions and the Seattle Seahawks as your wild card in the hunt there, probably. Dallas and Philadelphia, depending on who wins the division there. Once again, if Seattle stays in the wild card position, I think they've got the chops to be able to go on the road and get some road wins and make it all the way to the Super Bowl again. Over in the AFC right now, it's Pittsburgh and San Diego. You've also got Baltimore, Miami, and Houston all in the hunt. Of those teams, the Pittsburgh Steelers have done it before. I think they were the first team to go from the wild card position and get a victory in the Super Bowl. So I would say that they probably are the ones to do it again. I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers would probably, even the Baltimore Ravens, I think, a team that comes out of the AFC North would have the chops to probably go all the way from the wild card spot and get the win. Folks, that's all the time. I'm going to go watch the final 2 minutes as the Atlanta Falcons have just scored to make it 43-37. It is a six-point game, 2 minutes, 11 seconds left. The Falcons have all their timeouts left, which means that if they can stop Green Bay and get the ball back, they'll give Matt Ryan a chance to go out and score a touchdown. I'm going to enjoy the rest of that. Also, head out to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Check us out, all our handles, www.nflrnr.com. Come out to the website, support there. I'm going to start posting some stuff, especially closer to the holidays, and I've got a few cool things for all of you show donors. Thank you very much for supporting the show. Also, Richard Graves, thanks for coming on. I'm going to hopefully reach out to you and have you on again soon. And next week or later this week in the preview of week 15, Professor Playoffs will make an appearance and let us know what to expect with all the games coming up next week. I'm Steven Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. Thanks for listening. I'm out.